Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, I'm Hub Arkish, and along with Eric Edholm, it is our great pleasure to bring you this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly, where every week on the radio we try and give you all the news, scoops, and rumors from around the NFL, some of them before they even happen.
We'll take a look back at some of the significant picks of the 2013 NFL Draft, who made out and who may have missed the mark.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, everybody. I'm Hub Arkish. It is my pleasure to welcome you to this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. I am the publisher and editor here, and I am joined by senior editor Eric Edholm and associate editor Arthur Arkish. We're going to give you a little draft analysis this weekend, take you around the NFL, see if we can wrap up everything that happened in what has become the NFL's big three-day PR marketing team stocking fest. I don't know what you really want to call it these days. Real quick, let me get your guys' opinion, because I just don't like it. I'm sorry. I know it's done for TV and for money. It really wasn't done with the fans in mind. But that said, I used to love the draft weekend, the all-day Saturday, all-day Sunday. Teams had draft parties on Saturday. Everybody got together. Everybody went nuts. This may be good for TV and for money, but Eric, I'll come to you first. I don't think it has the fan in mind. You got to devote a whole evening Thursday night, a whole night Friday night, all day Saturday. I just don't like the way it's being done right now.
Yeah, I think it's devoted to the fan, you know, for one or two nights or something like that. But I you know, Saturday becomes a little, like you said, a little tough on the eyes. It takes a long time. You know, and these teams sitting in the war room, they at least had a couple of rounds to deal with back in the old format. But, I mean, if you didn't have a first-round pick, did you show up to the war room? What did you do? So it's kind of just an interesting setup. I'm not a huge fan.
You know, Arthur, I think it takes some of the skill out of it as well, to be honest with you, because when you knew that you were picking three rounds on Saturday, you were constantly working and maneuvering. Now all these teams have to do is work the first round. Then they've got a whole day to get ready for the second round and the third round, and I think it makes it a little easier on them.
Yeah, you know, I'll add one more benefactor to this new format, and that's obviously the team that picks at the top of the second day, because they are able to field those phone calls, you know, all day to see what teams are interested, who maybe will move up. We didn't see a lot of that. Obviously, the Jaguars stood pat at the top of the second round, but overall, I agree. It's a little bit drawn out. At least the first two nights, I find to be, you know, pretty entertaining, but by day three, I agree. Your eyes are starting to gloss over, and you've had enough.
All right, guys, one of the biggest stories of this draft certainly was the quarterbacks, and it's the fact that they were not overvalued for the first time in years. In fact, many people think they were tremendously devalued, and I personally can't say I was stunned. I think I said it on the show last week. I thought E.J. Manuel was probably the best prospect with the highest ceiling, at least, if not the most NFL-ready. He's the only one to go in the first round. The Buffalo Bills trade down from 8 to 16 to take him, and yet, Arthur, a lot of people thought that they may have still taken him too high.
Yeah, you know, I do applaud them for trading down from 8 to 16. They did try and at least match need and value a little bit more, and I applaud them for going out and getting their guy. They were very they did a good job of keeping this secret. Obviously, everyone was thinking Nassib would rejoin his college coach. They went in a different direction. I think E.J. Manuel is an exciting talent, has a lot of upside. However, I don't think he was worth the 16th pick in the first round.
Well, for me, it was just the stunning fall of guys like Matt Barkley, I mean, to the third fourth round, and you know, guys like Nassib and Wilson going outside the top 100. Hub, even in a questionable rookie class, I thought those guys deserved to go maybe a little bit higher. Now, Geno Smith probably ended up about where he should be. He's a talented kid, but there are questions about his attitude, about his focus. I mean, the talent is there, but, you know, it's an interesting risk, but I didn't like the match with the Jets. For some reason, him in New York scares the heck out of me.
Well, you took the next question right out of my mouth,
okay.
Eric. I still think what was it, 41 or
39? 39, yeah.
You know, the seventh pick or the eighth pick in the second round. I wouldn't have taken him that high because I haven't been a fan, but that is where he fits.
Right.
I think the fact that he dropped down, you know, almost to the middle of the second round. But I cannot think of a worse place for him to be than New York. We saw his immaturity, the poor behavior when he stormed out of the Radio City Music Hall Thursday night. He's now fired his agent as if it was.
Right.
This is obviously a kid who's not NFL ready. And now, you know, they're putting him right in the middle of the center ring of the big top. You know, it's just going to be crazy.
And one more note about that. I mean, you know, he did fire his agents in a story that kind of surprised people right after the draft. And, you know, all these stories have come out about how he was texting during a team meeting stuff. Look, that story probably came from the guys who was fired by her. That's fine. It doesn't make it not true, though. And nobody's coming out to deny this because now he's got to wait a few days before he gets his next representation. Geno Smith has mismanaged everything since the bowl game, you know, everything since his last college football game pretty poorly, I would say. And his handlers may not have done a good job either.
Well, and we need to be careful here at Pro Football Weekly because much like it happened 2 years ago with Cam Newton, you know, we don't print this stuff if it's not right. And, and now you're seeing it all. But more than that, Arthur, I look at the Philadelphia Eagles and Chip Kelly and everybody's saying, oh, you know, the mad scientist is here and he's going to bring, you know, the pistol and the run and shoot and this crazy offense. And what does he do? He has all night Friday night to figure out that the guy he wants, his quarterback of the future, is Matt Barkley, probably the most, you know, clear West Coast offense, you know, not athletic type guy. And it just tells you that Kelly is saying, I want football players. I don't want guys who fit molds. And it kind of cements what I've suspected all along, that he may have the biggest upside of all of them.
You know, I love the move. I think it's hard to argue with the value there at the top of the fourth round. And I think anyone who, you know, we know what Chip Kelly did at Oregon. We know what all the rumblings are of his breakneck tempo, his high-speed offense that's coming to the NFL. But frankly, until they get on the field in week one, we don't know exactly what this outfit's going to look like. Basically, it comes down to value for me. We had Matt Barkley, of course, as the top-rated quarterback. I believe he's the most NFL-ready right now, and I think it was a great move by Kelly to sweep him up in the fourth round.
Well, and two other quick thoughts, guys. I thought it was interesting once everybody realized it was time for quarterbacks in that fourth round. Philadelphia, the Giants, the Pittsburgh, everybody started trading up to get the guy they wanted. They had to trade up to get Nassib where they did, to get Landry Jones where they did in Pittsburgh. And finally, you have to ask yourself, what did Chip Kelly drafting Matt Barkley say about Ryan Nassib's draft stock? The fact that he passed on him a couple times, then in the fourth round, obviously it didn't bother the Giants, but they figure Eli's their guy anyway, so that'll be something else to keep an eye on. We're going to take a very quick commercial break here. We're back with more 2013 NFL College Draft analysis right after this. You've got Pro Football Weekly on your radio dial. I'm Hub Arkish along with Eric Edholm and Arthur Arkish. And guys, the other big story of the draft before we start doing a little team by team work, the offensive line. Never before in the history of the NFL college draft have three of the first four players been offensive tackles, as Eric Fisher went one, Luke Jokel two, then Lane Johnson number four. And then you had two offensive guards in the top ten. It had been since 1994 that a guard went in the top ten. Some people thought David DeCastro would last year, but because of the way guards are devalued, he slipped all the way down to 23. And now this year you've got both Jonathan Cooper and Chance Warmack, and then more tackles coming off the board. DJ Fluker, and then to make it really crazy, the Cowboys and the Bears did some stuff at 18 and 20 that nobody saw coming. But first, Eric, the decision by the Chiefs to go with Eric Fisher over Luke Jokel, to me it was a kind of a you-can't-go-wrong type deal, but I don't understand how you choose a guy who didn't always dominate in the MAC against a guy who did dominate in the SEC. That was a little puzzling to me.
You know, I traded a couple texts with some of their coaches. They love the fact that he played well in the big games. You know, they played against Michigan State, Iowa, teams like that. Seemed to have his best games on the biggest stages. That was one thing. They thought his athletic ability was a notch above Luke Jokel. They also liked the fact that he can play right tackle. And heck, that could be where he starts out if they get stuck with Brandon Albert. Brandon Albert is not a right tackle. He's not a left guard either, at least not in the Chiefs coach's mind. So if they are stuck with him, if they have to keep him to, in order to take the full value of Albert, Albert could be your left tackle, Fisher could be your right tackle. So I think that that played into the decision a little bit too.
And then, Arthur, we get to Lane Johnson at number four. Now, it clearly filled a need with one of the best players on the board, and I think a lot of people had him as a top 10 pick. I just felt like the 40-yard dash time got overvalued. I'm not sure that Lane Johnson is the fourth best player in this draft.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with you. I'm not so sure either if you look at, you know, the third best tackle going with the fourth pick. But, as far as getting a need, clearly they did address that. They're not sure what they have with Jason Peters coming off the injury. And you talk about athleticism. I mean, this is a kid, his upside might be the greatest of all three of these guys. And we know, well, again, we don't know, but what we hear is that Chip Kelly is going to try and run the defenses right off the field. He's going to need a left tackle. He's going to need linemen who can keep up that pace. And Lane Johnson does appear to fit the bill in that respect.
Right. Now, we like a lot of what the Eagles did, particularly with Barkley in the fourth round, some other picks with Lane Johnson. Chip Kelly's keeping everybody guessing as to exactly what offense is he going to run, because he made it clear when he drafted Matt Barkley, I never said that we were going to come in here and bring the Oregon offense, but that's why you go for a Lane Johnson. And then, Eric, I look at the two guards, both Cooper and Warmack. I'm not so sure they won't be the two best players in this draft.
I think you're right. I mean, Cooper could be a center, could be a guard. He's the most athletic interior, maybe the most athletic lineman in this whole group. And you know, not huge, not massive guy, but if he's in the 290, 295, 300 range, I think he'll be fine. He's going to help remake that offensive line out in Arizona. And the Tennessee Titans, with all the craziness that happens above them, they just sit back and wait for this guy to show up. I thought that was a great pick. I didn't love DJ Fluker at 11, but I thought that the Cooper, I mean, excuse me, Warmack at 10 was outstanding.
Well, and you have to wonder if that's not why they got stuck with Fluker. I don't want to say got stuck, because he's a good football player, and he's definitely a top 15, top 20 pick. But of all of the guys so far, he's the right tackle. DJ Fluker apparently is not going to play left tackle.
And they need a left tackle.
Yeah. And you know, it's much like devaluing guards. You tend not to value right tackles nearly as much as left tackle. Got a little breather on the offensive lineman then, until the Giants and the Bears and the Cowboys started going, not necessarily in that order, bang, bang, bang. Actually, the Cowboys didn't. They traded their pick to San Francisco, who came up to get the guy they had targeted in Eric Reed. The safety replaced Deshaun Goldson. But then the Giants come up with Justin Pugh, and right behind them, you got the Bears taking Kyle Long, who, you know, Arthur, a lot of people had him in the third round.
Yeah, I think it may have been a little bit of a reach, and they said he was their guy all along. Phil Emery said, you know, did they field some trade calls? And they said, yeah, we listened to some people, but if our guy was there at number 20, we weren't going to hesitate to take him. So, you know, say what you will about the value, Kyle Long brings a lot of versatility, a lot of athleticism. You just wonder if they would have been able to maneuver around the draft board a little bit and still get their guy.
It is interesting, Eric, because I don't think Kyle Long would have been there in the third round. I said some people say that.
Yep.
There were other teams who became infatuated with him, too. But I don't think there's any question the Bears could have traded down a little bit, gotten an extra pick, because not having that third pick in this draft really ended up hurting them. And it just seemed like they didn't work hard enough at it. Everybody else who was desperate to trade down seemed to find a way, including Jerry Jones, who trades down to 31.
Mm.
Some people say didn't get enough for the 49ers for
third
the trade.
Rounder, yep.
And then he drafts a guy who clearly would have been there in the third. Nobody was taking Travis Frederick in the first two rounds.
I think the earliest he could have gone was at the end of round two, maybe. But I just don't get it. I really don't. And he's a tough kid, and he's a big kid, but you start seeing where the other centers behind him, who are not that far behind him. Khalid Holmes went in the round four to the Colts. Brian Schwenke to the Titans in round four. That's kind of probably what we were talking about. He was a notch above them, but not very much so. And I don't know if he makes that line that much better.
The other interesting thing about this draft is it was deep in offensive linemen. Players going in the second, third, fourth round who are going to make a difference. Maybe the best offensive line draft we've seen in quite some time. We take another quick commercial break here. We're going to start going team by team. We've talked about a few. We're going to fill in the rest for you. It's all coming up right after this. We've got more Pro Football Weekly for you, NFL College Draft Analysis. Let's start in the AFC East. And, Eric, you know, a lot of people talk about the New England Patriots. They traded the 29th pick in the first round. They got a boatload of picks. They went after wide receivers and cornerbacks, which they have been wont to do in recent years. Did they get it right this year?
Well, this is the second year in a row that Bill Belichick has kind of handpicked a few guys. You know, last year he met with Alfonso Dennard a couple weeks before the draft, did the same with Jason Collins, had a speaking engagement down in Mississippi. They spent all night watching tape, and Bill thought, you know, I don't like him at 29, but I'll trade down 20 spots or whatever and get him at 52. And so, you know, that was his guy. Some of these guys, Aaron Dobson looks like a perfect fit for them. The rest of their picks kind of hit or miss, but we'll see. I mean, they need wide receiver help. That was one of the biggest things.
Arthur, we talked about Buffalo going high for E.J. Manuel. They got high marks for getting Robert Woods in the second round, got the fastest player in the draft with Marquise Goodwin in the third round. They had multiple second round picks. Actually, Kiko Alonso surprised some people at linebacker. And as far as the New York Jets, they got panned for what they did in the first round. I loved what they did in the first round. They got two really good football players with D. Milliner and Sheldon Richardson at 9 and 13. You know, they'll find a way to make Richardson fit, so I can't fault them for that. I thought John Idzik had a pretty good first day. The one team that we haven't talked about yet, though, is the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, the Miami Dolphins obviously made the bold move up the first round to go get their guy, Deion Jordan. They gave up their first and second rounders to do so. It to me was, as I mentioned, bold. It's in line to an extent with everything else Jeff Ireland's done this offseason. He's obviously going for it, but The part I wonder about is I don't know if Deion Jordan's a day one guy who's going to be ready. And everything else the Dolphins have done this offseason, as I mentioned, is kind of going for it, desperation, surround Ryan Tannehill. I think a lot of people thought Lane Johnson would be the guy after moving up. They go get Deion Jordan. He's an exciting prospect. But again, I don't know how much he's going to help them from day one. I could obviously be wrong there.
Well, and here's the issue, Eric. They need at least two, maybe three starting offensive linemen, including a left tackle.
Yep.
And they did take Dallas Thomas in the third round out of Tennessee. I don't know that he's a day one starter. I don't know if he's their left tackle of the future. And now we wonder, you know, is the Brendan Elbert trade going to happen? The Chiefs have said they'll take a 2014 pick.
Right.
But I don't think they're giving him away.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think they wouldn't take anything less than a number two next year. And you know, because of the picks that they had to give up in moving up, I don't know that the Dolphins want to, you know, sort of mortgage the future on that. I think Dallas Thomas can play right tackle. I just don't think Jonathan Martin can play left tackle. I didn't see much last year. I thought it was the weak part on that offensive line on the right side. Don't think he's going to be better on the left side. I will say this, though. Jamar Taylor in round two, steal. 54th pick. I thought this guy was a top 25 talent. I really did. I think he's going to come in and start in the Sean Smith spot and be very good.
You know, guys, it was just a month or two ago after the Super Bowl with all the offseason moves. We were all burying the Baltimore Ravens. I guess we forgot that Ozzie Newsome is the GM there.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, you take a look at this draft, Arthur. I'm not a huge fan of Matt Elam at 32 because everybody expects him to be Ed Reed, and he's not Ed Reed. He's an undersized player.
Though.
Good football
yeah.
player, but a little undersized. We'll see if he takes the beating. And then, you know, it's the Chicago Bears, everybody assumes desperate for a linebacker at 50. So they take John Bostic out of Florida. And then here comes Ozzie trading up at 56 to find Arthur Brown, who everybody thought was going to Chicago.
Yeah, Arthur Brown is a heck of a football player. And, you know, a report did surface shortly after the draft that both the Texans had their eyes on Arthur Brown. The name escapes me. The team right behind them was also interested in Arthur Brown. So the Ravens knew that. They moved up to get their guy. You know, let's ignore the people they're replacing because you don't replace Ray Lewis. You don't replace Ed Reed. But you do have to obviously find ways to get the next guy in to fill these holes. I love what they did at the top. And I think if you look throughout the rest of the draft, they added some really good defensive line depth, some competition there. I just think Ozzie Newsome did it again.
I don't think any team drafted more prototypical players for their uniform, their system, their logo than the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, you get Jarvis Jones, who, if he hadn't run a bad 40 at the combine, was a top 10 pick. They get him at 17 to plug right into one of those outside rushbacker spots. And then Le'Veon Bell from Michigan State. I watched him quite a bit in college. Guys, they're going to be comparing him to Jerome Bettis shortly. Okay. He's a little too much East-West stuff right now, but once they take that out of him, that's the kind of back he's going to be.
They had the most Pittsburgh Steeler-ish draft of all time. Like, it absolutely fits exactly what they're looking for. You hit the nail on the head with Jones. Bell is an ideal power runner in their system. Shamarco Thomas, the fact they got him and via a trade with Cleveland, I might add, that's something they may look back on in a few years. Perfect. And they may have gotten Marcus Wheaton from Oregon State. 5'11 can blaze down the field. I mean, just brilliant stuff. And they kept Emmanuel Sanders. I love what they did.
Arthur, one team getting universal praise, and this would have been unthinkable just a couple years ago, the Cincinnati Bengals. Tyler Eifert in the first round. Giovanni Bernard, some people think, could be the best running back in this draft out of North Carolina. They get Marcus Hunt, really interesting defensive end out of SMU with their extra number two. Sean Williams, a safety from Georgia. Rex Burkhead, the running back from Nebraska in
Good
the
player.
Sixth round
yep.
as a backup running back, could be really interesting.
Bengals had one of my absolute favorite drafts this year. I just love how they stuck to their board. They weren't worried as much about position. They were going to get value. Tyler Eifert fell right into their hands. Giovanni Bernard, these are guys that is just going to make A.J. Green and Andy Dalton better. It gives the offense flexibility. It gives them more explosiveness. This Marcus Hunt is also obviously an intriguing prospect. He has some serious length. If he doesn't help right away on defense, you know he's going to impact the special teams.
Eric, I don't want to say this was a one-player draft for the Cleveland Browns, but when all you've got is a one, a three, and then, you know, 6 and 2 7. Mm-hmm. So they go Barkevious Mingo at number 6. I love the kid's name, and I love the football player. He's really good.
Yeah.
But is he going to be able to compete at the next level? He dominated at times at LSU, and then he was a little invisible at times.
And the good news is they have some other guys there like Jabal Sheard. They don't need him to step in and play 1,000 snaps a rookie. So good explosive talent they can take a chance on. Obviously didn't love the quarterback class. Obviously traded for 2 picks next year, too, so this is more of a punt into 2014.
All right, we will wrap up the AFC in our next segment. We take a quick commercial break. How'd they do in the South and the West? We'll let you know in just a moment.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
We are, and we're heading into the AFC South for some draft analysis. Associate Editor Arthur Arkush is with us today, and this is his beat. So, Arthur, I will start with you, and first the Houston Texans. Some people love DeAndre Hopkins at 27. Some people said it was too high. What's your thought?
I think that he is a guy that should be able to help right away. I think that's what the Texans thought, is he's a really good fit and someone that should come in from day one and really ease the burden on Andre Johnson. Obviously, they've been trying to fill that hole for several years now. They think they have. I don't think he's a game breaker who's going to, you know, stretch the field and take the top off of defenses. But if he can open things up underneath and make, you know, vertical options for other people in that offense, I think it's a big upgrade over what they did have. If you look down the draft, they have some other pretty intriguing picks, a couple tackles in Brennan Williams and Quesenberry that are perfect for their system, are going to have a chance to come and compete right away. And then they added a couple outside linebackers that Wade Phillips is going to get a chance to work with. He's going to love the kid out of LSU who brings some real flexibility to that defense.
Interesting note here, Rick Smith, the GM, and Gary Kubiak all but said it was time to draft a quarterback, and they didn't. So obviously the one they wanted wasn't there.
Right.
We talk about Indianapolis, Eric, the reigning NFL Executive of the Year, and Ryan Grigson, incredible job last year. I like what he did after the first round. Hugh Thornton in the third round I thought was a bit of a steal. I think Khalid Holmes out of USC is an interesting pick, so you got real offensive line help there, kind of like Kerwin Williams in the seventh round. But Bjorn Werner, who's their first rounder, who fit there, as a matter of fact, was higher than 24 in a lot of lists.
Yeah.
There's something missing there for me. What am I missing?
I don't think he's Ryan Kerrigan, which is what they kind of thought they were getting with him. And you know, both were kind of these high-motor, high-energy rushers, left ends who were, you know, now are going to be playing in the 3-4 in the NFL. I mean, I just don't think he's going to have that kind of lateral movement skills, dropping in space. Kerrigan has done it brilliantly. He's been unbelievable for the Redskins, way better than I would have thought coming out of Purdue. Werner, a similar type of prospect in terms of his upfield ability. I don't see it going in reverse. I hate to say it, and I think that front office that did a terrific job. I didn't love this draft.
Arthur, in Tennessee, I could see Chance Warmack, Justin Hunter, Badira Wilson, Xavier Gooden, and Brian Schwenke, their first five picks, all starting for them this year. Am I smoking something I shouldn't be?
No, I think it was a pretty impressive haul. They did get, according to them, and I know a lot of teams will say this, they said Justin Hunter, their top-ranked wide receiver, they said that they got Chance Warmack, obviously their top-rated guard, and then Brian Schwenke, their top-rated center. So we knew they needed to overhaul the interior. They got serious about that. I think they are going to be much, much better, both against the run and in pass protection next year. And Justin Hunter is the Kenny Britt replacement. Britt's in a contract year. He's not going to be back. He hasn't been reliable enough. If Justin Hunter is past some of those knee issues, he is an explosive talent who gives Jake Locker another great weapon.
Ian, Arthur, I know Jacksonville's on your beat, and I saw a piece you just wrote about the job that David Caldwell did, kind of letting things fall to him. I love that Luke Jokel fell to him.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't get cute. I thought it was such a smart move. Eugene Monroe, another guy entering a contract year, they like him a lot, but they can start Jokel out on the right side, and they've got some pretty darn good bookends. And then a lot of people were kind of scratching their head that they didn't get a quarterback. To me, to pass on a quarterback in this lackluster class, if you don't see the guy you love, I think it shows real maturity, real restraint. I think Dave Caldwell has done some impressive things in his first offseason and might finally have the Jaguars headed in the right direction.
And they got Matt Scott as an undrafted free agent. A kid who some people were intrigued about and thought could be higher, so right. It's like they got one for free.
They thought that's who Philadelphia was trading up for at the top of round four.
So and I got to mention, I'm sorry, I didn't mention Denard Robinson and Ace Sanders. Just a couple really explosive and exactly fast. They give you some flexibility. I just think they were great, great finds in the middle rounds.
All right, we've got to quickly roll through the AFC West. And Eric, in Oakland, I've got three words or names and two initials for you. Reggie McKenzie, DJ Hayden, question mark.
Yeah, I like it more than you do, I think. And obviously the serious injury he suffered, the sheared blood vessel in November, a major, major concern. Football-wise, though, I think they got a very good player. Loved C.O. Moore in round three. Thought he was an inspired pick. And Tyler Wilson, I mean, watching his junior tape, I thought he was a really good football player. Fell back a little bit. I like the value.
Well, and Menelik Watson, who they got at 42,
good point to him,
I probably would have taken over Kyle Long at 20.
Yep.
So good job. I just thought 12 was way too high. I love the story.
That's
I just
fair.
Thought 12 was way too high for DJ Hayden. Arthur, in San Diego, it's really not about DJ Fluker. It's more about Manti Te'o in the second round and Keenan Allen in the third round. Most boards had those kids as first rounders, too.
Yeah, that's right. But I think what we saw with new GM there, Tom Telesco, is a willingness to look past the stopwatch, to look past some of these guys who maybe didn't impress, you know, athletically as much. And he looked at the tape and saw some very productive football players. We talked about Fluker a little bit. Manti Te'o, of course, everyone's talked about plenty. So, you know, I think that they got some pretty good football players. I think they may have had some greater needs that they needed to address, but, it's going to be fascinating to see. Everyone's, of course, going to be talking about Manti Te'o as much as anyone in this draft.
Kansas City got nice prospects, especially Travis Kelce and Nile Davis in the third round, Nico Johnson in the fourth round. But this draft is going to be judged on whether or not Eric Fisher over Jokel was the right move. So let's go to Denver, Eric, and talk about Sylvester Williams falling to them at 28. Again, this is another team that kind of won the lotto as far as I was concerned.
Great value there. They had no choice. You know, defensive tackle may not have been their top knee, but that was certainly the direction they were going to go. One thing here is interesting, too. They took Monty Ball over Eddie Lacy, and they said health was the biggest reason. Some people questioned the move, but now looking and hearing what John Elway had to say, maybe not the worst move at all.
Another kid you want to watch is Quanterrus Smith, a defensive end out of Western Kentucky in the fifth round. We've got to take a commercial break. We still got the whole NFC coming for you, though. Lots of draft picks, lots of analysis. Who won, who lost? That'll take 2 years to figure out, but they're fun talking about right now. PFW rolls on the radio as we talk about the 2013 NFL College Draft, analyzing what everybody did and didn't do. It's time to go to the NFC East. That is senior editor Eric Edholm's regular beat. He is with me today along with associate editor Arthur Arkish. I'm Hub Arkish. And, you know, in Philadelphia, Eric, I think a lot of the conversation was about that trade on day three to get Matt Barkley. And, of course, Lane Johnson at number four, solid pick, maybe a few spots too high. Eagles did a lot of other things a lot of people like, too, though.
Yeah, went heavy on offense early in the draft, but they also got Benny Logan, a real inspirational kid, a defensive tackle, lost Mike Patterson, lost Cullen Jenkins, good fit there. Earl Wolfe, I mean, it's a wide-open safety derby. I wouldn't be shocked if he steps in. He could beat out Patrick Chung or somebody like that. And Jordan Poyer, the kid in round seven, boy, this is a stunner for me. I have no idea how he got that low, 13 interceptions at Oregon State, could play nickel. I think that secondary has been completely revamped. And like you said, we kind of have some different ideas about now what Chip Kelly's going to do there.
I'll tell you, one of the things that stunned me was the New York Giants on the board in the first round with both Sharif Floyd and Sylvester Williams there, and knowing their draft history and what Jerry Reese does with pass rushers, they go for Justin Pugh. Not a bad pick. Tackle out of Syracuse, but I thought they'd go defensive line there.
Right. Short arms and a kid that a lot of people had a guard, so that was a little bit surprising. I think that, you know, they felt better about themselves after rounds two and three. Jonathan Hankins, a kid who was at least discussed as a first-round possibility. More of a workman-like guy, seems to fit that Chris Canty role. He's gone now. Demontre Moore might be their project's pass rusher. They always seem to land one in the top three rounds. You know, remember, Justin Tuck's a third-round pick, so there is hope for this guy to turn out. And then the big trade-up for Nassib was a very interesting draft for them.
And we should point out, many are calling Justin Pugh the toughest player in this draft.
One of them, yep.
He's not a bad prospect there, but he did have some warts. Look at the Washington Redskins. A lot of this draft will be judged on was RG3 worth two drafts, because that's where the first round pick went. But after that, they did some curious stuff.
Well, they took a lot of guys who had a lot of interceptions in college. You know, guys like David Amerson, his sophomore year. Philip Thomas led the NCAA in picks last year. Bakari Rambo made a lot of big plays. They also got burned a lot. That's one big thing. Jordan Reed, the tight end, pretty athletic kid, seems to fit that Fred Davis mold pretty well. They've got some depth all of a sudden.
Now, with the Dallas Cowboys, we've talked about Travis Frederick. No need to go back there. I don't want to beat Jerry Jones up any more than I normally do. Gavin Escobar, I love him as a receiver. Can't block. Too high at 47 in the second round. I love Joseph Randall in the fifth round. He could be the steal of this draft.
Yeah, their values were definitely lower on in the draft. I just, some of the question marks here in Terrence Williams, the project. This kid, B.W. Webb, in round four, I think could step in and be a factor in the sub packages, but who's running that draft? You know, I mean, who is it? You know,
well, his son Steven's the person.
Yeah, I guess so. I just say it's just confusing.
It's all in the family. Yeah. What are you going to do? They're destined to be 500 forever, but they got a nice stadium. Let's talk about the New Orleans Saints, Arthur. They got another one of my favorite players in the draft. Of course, they forfeited the second round pick. We all know, you know, hopefully Bounty Gate is finally behind them. But Kenny Vaccaro at 15 for what the Saints' needs were, I thought was outstanding. And I love Taron Armstead at the third round, too.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. They had a clear a position where they needed to upgrade at safety over Roman Harper. I think they did that for sure. I think if you look elsewhere throughout the draft, they compensated for not having that second rounder, of course, from the bounty scandal with some other really intriguing picks. Everyone remembers Terron Armstead, the incredible combine he had. He looks like he could be a pretty impressive left tackle down the road. And then John Jenkins looks like the kind of guy that you can really help, you know, transition to that 3-4 defense, stick right in the middle. So I thought they did pretty well in terms of getting value without having that high pick.
Eric, when the Atlanta Falcons traded up to 22, I thought they were going after Xavier Rhodes. They took Desmond Trufant, the cornerback out of Washington. I love Levine Toilolo in the fourth round. He's the other tight end out of Stanford.
Yeah, I mean, I thought their draft overall was good, but not great. Some of these guys that they obviously targeted and felt like, you know, this is a player we can build around, Desmond Trufant, even Alford in round two. Bit reach, reach type picks for me.
Arthur, the Carolina Panthers went into the draft with a clear need. Defensive line, defensive line, defensive line. Star Lotulelei falls to them at 14. Never saw that coming. And then in the second round, Quan Short. This kid stays out of trouble. They may have a pair of bookend tackles that are both going to Pro Bowls for the next 10 years.
Yeah, I'm impressed with what they have done and what they look like in the front seven. Obviously, Star falling like that, you run that card up to the podium. That was a gift for them, and they do look really stout up the middle now, of course, with Kuechly getting protection in front of him. I like the guys who can wreak havoc off the edge. What I'm wondering is what in God's green earth are they doing in the secondary, because it was terrible last year, and they've done nothing to address it.
Well, and then you look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They're all secondary. They went and got Darrell Revis, so you've got to factor that in. I don't love what they did with their draft picks, though, Eric.
Yeah, I mean, some of these guys I think are okay. I mean, Jonathan Banks may have played his way into the second round. Mike Glennon, a bit of a stretch for me. I don't love him. William Goldson, though, could be a nice fourth-round pick.
We're going to take another quick commercial break here, guys, but we've still got plenty of NFC draft analysis. What's happening in the North with the Packers, the Bears, the Lions, and the Vikings? We'll look at the West as well. That's all coming up just ahead. We're breaking down the 2013 NFL College Draft here on Pro Football Weekly on the radio. We've gotten to the NFC North, and Eric, the Detroit Lions at number 5, Ziggy Ansah. Everybody knew it was coming. He was going to go up into the top 10. He clearly is not a top 10 pick as a football player, but he's the number 1 pick in every draft as an athlete.
Yeah, boom or bust. That's what it is. I mean, he could be really, really special like Jason Pierre-Paul if he exerts himself. But, you know, Pierre-Paul took a step back. So Ansah is the same thing. Wasn't on anybody's radar a year ago. Could be fantastic, and I think that D-line around him should help him become better.
Arthur, Chicago Bears fans doing a lot of head-scratching these days. They committed their entire free agency haul to the offensive line. Not that they didn't need more help, but they go for a real reach in Kyle Long in the first round. Then they come back with a couple linebackers, John Bostic and Kasim Green. Bostic appeared overdrafted. Kasim Green seemed to be a steal in the fourth round. Some had him in the second round. Then they get an offensive tackle again in the fifth round in Jordan Mills. This is not a draft that pleased a lot of Bears fans.
No, it didn't, and it's one that's going to be remembered more than anything by the Long pick. But I will say that I think they did do a good job of filling some other needs with these other linebackers who really fit what they want to do. Bostic and Green both have terrific athleticism. Of course, the Bears want linebackers who can flat out fly. These guys should be able to do that. Jordan Mills is intriguing, could be able to provide competition right away to an offensive line that is clearly in major flux. So some interesting picks later on in the draft.
You know, Eric, after what Rick Spielman did last year, trading a backup into the bottom of the first round to get Nolan Harrison, and now he comes back this year with 3 first-round picks, just the fact that Sharif Floyd is there at 23 makes this a good draft. But you look at a bunch of other stuff he did here. I think Rick Spielman had a pretty good day for himself.
Yeah, you know, I said the other day on Twitter, I said they could get 5 starters out of this. Floyd eventually could start at defensive tackle. He's behind Kevin Williams right now. Xavier Rhodes could be a day one starter. Cordell Patterson could start at receiver and be the kick returner. Jeff Locke could beat out Chris Cluey at punter. Gerald Hodges could be the weak side linebacker. And really, that's my only major complaint, other than the Patterson trade being a little bit rich. The fact they didn't get a starting middle linebacker out of this group means Aaron Henderson moves to the middle, which is not my favorite situation, but they got a lot.
Arthur, a lot of people raving about Ted Thompson and the Green Bay Packers. Dayton Jones, a nice pick at 26. But getting Eddie Lacy at 61 and then Jonathan Franklin at 125, two of the top 6 running backs in the draft, seems like the Packers had a good day as well.
Yeah, I think Ted Thompson, another one of these guys who just gets it, realizes the past couple of years they needed a running game to help Aaron Rodgers, didn't really have any semblance of it. Now they're going to not only have a running game, they're going to have some significant competition between Lacy and Franklin. I love those picks. Later on in the draft, they go and get Micah Hyde, a real versatile defensive back who I think also is going to have a chance to really contribute to that defense.
It's hard to judge the Seattle Seahawks in terms of just the draft when you realize everything they did leading up to it. But you know, Eric, this Christine Michael from Texas A&M, you talk about boom or bust. Some people called him the most talented running back in the draft. Chris Harper, the wide receiver from Kansas State, Jordan Hill from Penn State, they got some more guys who should play for him.
I loved almost every pick in the draft except the Christine Michael pick. I think he's going to probably be their kickoff return. Didn't do it a lot in college, but he's the number three back right now behind Turbin and Marshawn Lynch. So, love the Hill pick. I thought they needed D-line help. Chris Harper, really underrated, had bad quarterback play, at least in terms of accuracy. Jesse Williams at round 5. Is that a steal or what? And this kid, Therald Simon, who had the arrest in the days leading up to the draft, may have been very much innocent. So him sliding to round 5, if that was at all affected by that, they may have gotten a steal there, too.
All right, so the San Francisco, how does this happen? They're the best team in the NFL. I know they lost the Super Bowl, but
yeah.
I think they're the best team in the league. They get Eric Reed at 18. Tank Carradine, Cornelius Carradine out of Florida State is going to be starting for him inside of a year or two. Didn't love the Vance McDonald pick also in the second round, but the pick I love the most, anybody who knows the Frank Gore backstory knows why Marcus Lattimore is now a 49er in the fourth pick. If this kid is 80% healthy, they just stole the best running back in the draft.
And the beauty of this draft for the 49ers, they had pretty much no needs. They addressed the one glaring one with Eric Reed, traded up to get him. All these other guys they can afford to wait on. That's the beauty of Marcus Lattimore, Tank Carradine, guys that teams really love, but they weren't sure how quickly they'd be able to contribute because of injuries. The Niners don't need him until 2014. You keep looking down further in the draft. Corey Lemonnier, I mean, there's just, it's the rich get richer. The talent from this draft is unbelievable.
Another first-time GM in Kyman, of course, in Arizona with Bruce Arians. I love everything they did. Jonathan Cooper, Kevin Minner. I didn't love the Honey Badger in the third round, but Alex Okafor in the fourth round, Stephon Taylor in the fifth round, the running back out of Stanford, did a really nice job. And we've only got about 20 seconds left, unfortunately, for the Rams, Eric. Who were as bold on draft day as anybody in the league?
Didn't love their pick either. You know, taking a 175-pound player and trading up for the number 8 spot. I don't think he'll ever be a 1,300-yard receiver. But they made up with it. Some good, solid picks later in draft. Barrett Jones, Brandon McGee, people like that, Stedman Bailey.
Alec Ogletree, he may have some issues, but nobody does issues better than Jeff Fisher.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there. That does it for our draft analysis, but we still got a little publisher's pen coming, so stick around. That's up next.
And now with the publisher's pen, the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish.
You know, Eric, it's interesting to me, and we try and bang away at this as best we can in the hopes that people hear. We call it draft analysis. We're not doing grades on these drafts because you just don't know. You've got to wait at least 2 years to see how many of these kids are starters, how many are backups, how many are good players, how many have warts that were in their scouting reports that turn out to be true, how many have upside that they've achieved. We're just not going to know, so we can't say this team did well and this team did poorly in terms of the talent they got. But what we can grade and talk about, which is what we tried to do here today, is what became one of the most popular phrases of the weekend in the draft. It's draft management. It's having GMs and scouts in your front office who know what's going on around the league, who know what to expect, who know what the value of their picks are, and who are able to maneuver to get good value for those picks. And that's why when we talk about a team reaching for a Travis Frederick or a Kyle Long or a Tavon Austin, if they become great players, that's fine, but could you have maneuvered and dealt and gotten them somewhere else? The good teams do it all the time. The teams that don't quite get it end up making these controversial picks, and they become the headlines the day after the draft. And that's going to do it for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. We want to thank our outstanding engineer and producer, Randy Meyer, does such a great job for us every week. And, of course, also our thanks to Syndication Networks, our home studio and syndicator. And most of all, we want to give our thanks to you for listening. We do appreciate it. We look forward to joining you again next week, same time, same station, with Pro Football Weekly.